Violence. True stories of why crimes are committed. Presented in the hope that these factual cases will help you, the citizens, to understand the forces that motivate crime and to aid in its prevention. This is the story of violence. Practically every modern law enforcement agency today employs the services of a consultant whose job it is to discover the true motives behind the prisoner's act against society. One of these consultants is Dr. Richard Morley. This is his report on the case of Arthur Bowman, who committed murder.
May 5th. The district attorney presented to me details of the murder and subsequent confession by the prisoner, Arthur Bowman. It was a particularly brutal crime, strangulation and beating. The accused man was highly emotional during police questioning. He freely admitted to the crime but denied a motive. Bowman had no previous record, and neighbors testified to his excellent character. I had my first interview with the murderer that afternoon in the prison. Hello, Mr. Bowman. I'm Dr. Morley. I've come here to help you find out why this happened.
I don't know. I've told them.
That's all right. Cigarette?
No.
You sure? It's all right if you want to.
Thanks.
I'd like to ask you one or two things.
I don't know.
How old are you, Mr. Bowman?
44.
I understand you have a couple of children.
Yes.
Boys?
Boy, girl. Look, I don't want to answer any more questions. Why don't you go away?
Tell me about them.
I love them. Sure I do. They're good kids. What's going to happen to them? I must have been crazy. I must...
What about your wife? Were you happy before this happened?
I don't know. I don't... Listen, you're a doctor. I know why you're here. Will you help me? Please.
We'll see.
So that you can put me in an electric chair. That's why you're here, isn't it?
No. That's not the reason.
I'd tell you why, if I could. I just...
I know. Tell me, Mr. Bowman, what about when you were a kid? Big family?
Four. I was the oldest. Jack was the baby and the two girls.
Mm-hmm. Did you have fun?
I guess so, sometimes. My mother was pretty strict. I had to help her take care of the others. It was rough on my mother. She had the baby when I was 10. You know how it is.
Yes.
I didn't want it to be that way with my kids. I wanted them to have fun. I guess she couldn't understand the way I felt.
Your wife, May?
Yeah, May. Like the time I wanted to take them all on a boat ride up the river for a day. I planned it for a surprise on Sunday. I told her about it Saturday night after the kids were...
Get another dishcloth, Arthur. That one's getting wet.
Sure. May.
What?
I got an idea. We doing anything tomorrow?
No.
Good. What do you say if we take the kids up the river tomorrow? You know, a picnic. They'd have a fine time on the boat. The Henrys are going.
Oh, fine. That's just fine. I suppose you made the date just like that. You didn't ask me, of course. You don't stop to think that I got the kids every day, day in and day out.
No, I didn't say
that. You don't think maybe I'd like to go out on Sunday. Do something that I want to do.
I thought you'd like it.
Oh, yeah. Wouldn't that be nice? You and Doug Henry go off and talk about fishing. I'm stuck with the kids and Nancy. That'd be fun for me.
I wouldn't go with Doug.
I bet you wouldn't. Like the last time you went bowling. What time was it you got in?
Do we have to go through that again?
That's just the way you are. Just nothing but selfish. You're not thinking of me or the kids. It's just you. Well, I'm tired, too. You can think of me for once.
I think of you.
Oh, get out of my kitchen. I'm sick of it.
Did you go on the boat?
Yeah, we went. Guess she wanted to show me what a great sacrifice she was making.
What about this fellow, Henry? Doug, you said? A friend?
Yeah. Doug's all right. We go bowling together every week. We used to.
You said something about coming home late one night.
Yeah. We got through bowling early and Doug wanted a beer. I don't drink much. I guess I never liked it. But I said, okay, we could talk.
Everything all right, sir?
Oh, everything's great, honey, great. Another beer for me and my friend.
No more for me,
Doug. Don't listen to him, honey. He thinks he's getting old. Two beers.
Sure, right away.
Artie, Artie, I saw you.
Nice looking kid, huh?
Doug, do you have any fun at home?
Huh?
You know what I mean. How do you get along with Nancy?
Boy, she gets along with me. That's the way it is in my house. She gets along with me or else.
But do you have any fun?
Sure we do. I'm Tom Rover, the fun-loving Rover boy.
I guess it would be nice.
Huh?
Oh, I don't know. that beer's kind of strong, you know, and I'm not used to it.
Yeah. Makes a man of you. A couple of more and you don't feel any pain, you know what I mean?
Time it is?
No.
It's after one. Nearly two. Where have you been?
With Doug. Gee, I didn't realize it was so late. You've been waiting up?
You're drunk.
No, I had a couple of beers with Doug, that's all.
Doug?
Sure, we got through bowling early.
Did you?
Oh, May, I'm sorry. Listen.
No, you listen. I'm fed up. Coming home in the middle of the night, drunk. Disgusting. I'm ashamed for the neighbors. The kids.
Oh, May, don't. I'm just sorry. I didn't do anything.
Get away from me.
But I only want to kiss you.
Kiss? You? I wish you were...
What? You wish I was what?
Keep your voice down.
Maybe I wish sometimes, too. Maybe I do.
Stop it. You'll wake up the kids.
Well, let them wake up. Do them good. Dirty little spoiled brats. Let them wake. May, I'm sorry. I didn't mean what I said. May, please, I'm sorry. May.
That was the conclusion of the first questioning of Arthur Bowman. There was no doubt that he was aware of the magnitude of his crime. He'd shown a marked hostility to his wife in his statements. There'd been no attempt to hide that, or his feeling of guilt concerning the night when he'd arrived home from his bowling party with Douglas Henry. On May 7th, Bowman spoke of his job, his employer, and the employer's secretary. His position with the company was minor, and he felt a great frustration in that fact. Other younger men came into the business and were promoted. He was not. Here, Bowman returned to his feeling of remorse over his wife and children. He wanted to talk about the puppy, which was brought into the home 2 weeks before the murder.
She brought it for the kids. They all made a big fuss about it. I never liked dogs much. One night I came home, I was...
Pinky. He tied it under his chin.
That's my fishing hat. Give me that.
He didn't do anything, Paul.
Why did
you hit him? He didn't do anything. Come on, Pinky. It's all right. Come on.
What's the matter? Oh, hello, Arthur.
Look what that dog did to my hat. Look.
You've had it ever since I can remember. Now you can get a new one. It was filthy anyway.
Daddy hit Pinky, Mama. He's under the couch and he won't come out.
We've got to get rid of that dog. I won't have my things destroyed. We've got to get rid of it.
You're acting like a child, hitting a baby puppy.
It's all right, Pinky. It's all right. Let me hold him. He's mine.
All right, children, take him in the kitchen. It's time for his supper.
Come on, come on.
You better get washed up, Arthur. As soon as the puppy's fed, we'll eat.
Do you know why you didn't like the dog, Mr. Bowman?
Oh, I don't know. My mother had one when I was a kid. It was a big dog. I remember it bit me and I was scared of it, but she kept it anyway.
Did you get rid of him? I mean, your children's puppy.
Well, I wanted to, but they wouldn't let me. Always babying it. It made me sick. Then one morning I was on my way to work. I was a couple of minutes late. And Mr. Heston, he's my boss, like I told you. He's always giving me a funny look when I'm late. Well, the car was parked in the driveway. I hadn't put it away the night.
Arthur!
Yes?
Have you seen Pinky?
No.
We got out of the backyard. See if he's in the garage.
I haven't got time. I'm late. Tell Terry to.
All right, but look under the car, though, before you drive out. He might be there.
Okay, okay.
Well, I hope there isn't much traffic. I'm going to be late.
Oh, I forgot to look. I didn't look.
I did it. I killed it.
Heart disease is one of America's first causes of disability and death. Your gifts have greatly helped our scientists and doctors in gaining new knowledge about this disease. Let's keep on helping them until every heart in America is protected. Please mail a generous gift to Heart, care of your local post office. And now, back to violence.
The motive behind Arthur Bowman's act of murder was becoming increasingly evident. The effect upon him by the domineering and strict mother was aggravated in later life by his unhappy and frustrated wife. The killing of the dog functioned only as a detonator. The total explosion was yet to come. On May the 9th, we held our fourth interview.
I've been thinking about what we were talking of last time. The dog.
Yes.
Well, why didn't I look under the car when May told me to? I was late, but I didn't want to run over it. I never do a thing like that.
Do you think it's possible that you did want to get rid of it, and not looking was an easy way? Your excuse?
No, oh, no. I didn't even know it was there, under the car.
You didn't look. It might have been. What happened at home after the dog was run over?
Well, they wouldn't talk to me. May, the kids, they thought it was my fault. I felt like I did when I was a kid. And one day I hit the baby, and my mother made a big fuss about it. She didn't talk to me for a week.
Did you feel that May was behaving the way your mother did?
I guess so.
Did you resent it?
Well, I was sorry about the dog, but it was only a dog. They didn't have any right to treat me like that.
Did you feel that they'd given to the dog the affection that you wanted?
Sure, that's what they did. Man comes home tired from work, and all he hears is what the dog did. Nobody cared what I did.
You were telling me a little about your job the other day, Mr. Bowman. Now, your employer's name is Heston, isn't it?
Yeah, I've been there for 9 years.
You said you were in the accounting department?
Yeah. I should have been the head of it a long time ago, but it's all politics.
Was Mr. Heston unfair to you?
Oh, I don't know. He didn't like me much, always making cracks. Like the time I was getting ready to quit for the day a couple of weeks ago.
Was that before the dog was run over?
No, after 7 or 8 days.
It
through, Arthur?
Just about.
Boss wants to see you before you go.
Oh?
Take it easy, Arthur. I'll see you in the morning.
Yes? Oh. Hello, Arthur. Say, I wonder if you'd like to take on some extra work. Shouldn't take you more than a week or so. You can do it at home.
Well, I don't know, Mr. Heston. Couldn't one of the other boys...
Oh, well, yes, they could. But I thought it might be a good thing for you. It's an important account. We want it done right. You're our best man, you know, Arthur.
I guess I could try it, Mr. Heston, if you think it's all right. I mean, if it's that important, maybe the chief ought to handle it.
Oh. You know, Arthur, the trouble with you is you're afraid of yourself. You ought to do something about that.
Well, sure, Mr. Heston, if you think
that... It's all right. I'll give it to the chief. See you in the morning, Arthur. Thanks for dropping in.
Can I have some more potatoes, Ma?
Ellen, pass your brother the potatoes.
He'll get fat if he eats too many, won't he?
Oh, you shut up.
Don't say shut up to your sister, Terry.
May.
Yes?
Boss wanted me to do some extra work this week.
Oh?
Know what I told him? I said no, Mr. Heston. That's what I said. Can you imagine? Now he's trying to get me to do everybody else's job as well. It's not good enough for promotion.
Maybe it'd have been smart to take it.
For what? I know Heston. He's waiting for me to make a mistake so he can ease me out. Well, I'm smart. I'm not making any mistakes.
Oh, you're smart. All right. Get your hand out of the butter, Terry. Oh, yes, you're so smart. Everybody's wrong, and you're right. Don't stay on the right side of the boss. You tell him how smart you are. You know everything.
You think I should have done it?
All I know is you've had the same job for 9 years. 4 raises. I noticed Doug Henry's the head of his department at the store.
You're siding with Heston, too, huh? Everything I do stinks. Everything anybody else does...
Don't you use that language in front of the children.
Shut up! Shut up! And that dog... I wait!
Arthur Bowman's pressures were reaching a highly dangerous stage. Had there been an outlet, a release from his frustrations and fears, had he been able to voice these thoughts, a murder might never have taken place. But the boiling point had been reached. Having killed once, it was only a question of time before he lost complete control of his hostile feelings. On the 10th of May, he began to tell me about the day which ended in death.
I guess I didn't eat much for breakfast that morning.
What were you thinking about when you left home to go to work?
I don't know.
Well, what was your attitude toward your wife then? I mean, did you want to make up?
No. No, I didn't.
Had your children annoyed you that morning or the night before?
They were siding with her. It was like with the dog, only maybe worse. I had a lot of work to do that afternoon. It must have been about 5 when Mr. Heston came out of his office.
Arthur.
Hmm?
Would you take a look at this for a minute?
Well, sure, Mr. Heston.
There seems to be a discrepancy in the figures to the Southern Metals April accounts. You took care of these, didn't you?
Yes, sir.
Well, they've been checked twice now, their boys and the chief. I'm afraid you made a slip.
I'm sorry, Mr. Heston.
Hello. It's all right. Just be more careful, will you? We can't fool around with $50,000 that belongs to someone else, you know.
I'm sorry, Mr. Heston. It won't happen again.
All right, sure, sure. It's okay.
You all right, Arthur?
Huh? Oh, sure.
Don't let it get you. You're entitled to one mistake.
Oh, yes.
That reminds me. Could you do me a favor?
Oh, I guess so.
My car's in the garage. Won't be ready until tomorrow. Would you drop me off on your way home? Unless you're...
Oh, no. That's okay. Sure, be glad to.
Thanks. Penny for your thoughts, Arthur.
Hmm?
They're not worth it, really.
You're not unhappy about Mr. Heston calling you down this afternoon, are you?
No.
He likes you. He does. Trouble with you, Arthur, is you don't let people like you, you know?
I guess so.
Listen, I want to talk to you. I've been meaning to for quite a while. There's a bar on the next block. I usually stop by for a drink on the way. I'll let you buy me a martini. How's that?
Well...
Come on, I won't tell your wife. You're safe with me.
All right. I don't drink, though. Well, maybe a beer.
Oh, I would have bet it was a beer. You can park in the back over there. Here's to you, Arthur. Don't you ever drink anything except beer?
No, I don't drink much.
I can see that. This is my second. You're still nursing your first.
I'm sorry.
Oh, for heaven's sake. Stop being sorry. That's the first thing. Why are you always sorry?
I don't know.
I'll tell you something. You know what Mr. Heston thinks about you?
No.
Well, I'm going to tell you, and it's for your own good.
Sure, I understand.
He thinks you're wishy-washy. He thinks you've got what it takes, but you're wishy-washy.
I don't...
You know Heston. He's a nice guy, but he wants a man to say what he thinks. Well, you've been sitting behind that adding machine for 9 years. You could have been head of the department by now, even Heston's assistant, but you're wishy-washy.
I guess that's the way I am.
There you go again. You don't even fight. Don't you ever fight? I'm telling you this for your own good, Arthur.
I know.
What does your wife say?
Well, she says the same thing, I suppose.
There you are. Don't you ever get mad? Don't you want to hit somebody, make them listen to you?
No, I don't get mad.
That's the trouble. You're a good-looking man, Arthur. You're not so old. You could do big things. But you've got to stop being wishy-washy.
If I hadn't got married when I did, I was very young then, you know. Maybe I'd be different. Maybe that's it.
Don't you love your wife?
I don't know. I think so. I don't know.
You ought to go out on a binge. That's what you need. And I'm the girl who can take care of it. Call the waiter, Arthur. A nice, loud voice now. You call him.
Yeah, sure. Waiter!
I'm 33, Arthur. Next month, I'll be 34. You don't see me worrying, do you?
No, you're all right, Ellen.
Yeah. Listen, my drinking alone. What's the matter with you? That's still your first.
I'll have another in a while.
Now, like that puppy dog you were telling me about. You should have told him it's too bad. I did it. We'll get another. Forget it. You shouldn't brood.
I know. You're right.
I guess it's tough. You got a wife like May.
But you don't know her, Eileen. You might think differently.
Yeah, I'll bet. Nag, nag, nag. No wonder. I feel sorry for you. Oh, well, I guess we better be going, huh? What's the time?
11.
Hey, we better. You're gonna get it. Come on. You turn right at the block after next. That's my street, Arthur.
Yes.
You mad because of the way I talk tonight?
No.
It's for your own good. I hate to see you sitting in the office like you do, a nice-looking fellow like you.
It's all right.
Listen, you can come up for a nightcap if you want. I haven't got any beer, but
I'd
be glad to...
I'd like to, Eileen, but...
Well, then, if you'd like to, come on up.
Well...
It's on the right, beyond the empty lot there.
All right.
You know, if I was a man, you, next time your wife made any kind of a crack, stand up for yourself. Tell her what you think. Oh, this is it, Arthur. Home, sweet home. You coming up?
I don't think I'd better. Thanks, anyway.
Arthur. Arthur. Oh, you kill me. You really do. You're even afraid of me. You're afraid of yourself. You're afraid of your wife. I know what's the matter with you.
It's late, Eileen.
You're wishy-washy.
That's what you are.
Please don't say that anymore.
Just a little thing like having a nightcap in a girl's apartment and you act like a scared kid. Oh, boy, what a husband you'd make.
Please don't say anymore.
Maybe I'm wrong about your wife. Maybe she's the one I should feel sorry for.
Shut up.
She's got to put up with you every day.
Shut up. Stop it.
Arthur, you're wishy-washy. That's what you are. Wishy-washy.
Stop it. Stop it.
Well, you are. You're afraid of me and you're afraid
of... I'll kill you.
What did you do after that?
I knew she was dead. I just opened the door. She fell out on the sidewalk. I went home.
Do you know that it was wrong to kill her?
Yes. Yes, I know.
How did you feel toward your wife then?
I was sorry, I guess. I mean, the trouble it's going to mean. But why, Doctor? Why did I kill? Why did I kill Eileen? Why?
Why did Arthur Bowman kill a comparative stranger? It might have been any woman, any stranger. It happened to be Eileen. She had treated him as had all the others in his life who had dominated and frustrated him. And although his semi-conscious resentment was directed toward his wife, he could no more kill her than he could have killed his own mother. His repressed angers had reached the point of explosion. Had he, throughout his life, been able to voice these emotions, he would not have resorted to violence.
Arthur Bowman was brought to trial in August. More than two dozen witnesses, including his employer, John Heston, appeared in his behalf. The defense based their case on the fact that the defendant was not conscious of the wrongful nature of the act at the time he committed the crime. In a moment, we will tell you the outcome of this case.
Science is now undertaking one of the most intensive research programs in history as it battles the menace of cancer. To continue this vital research, we must all join the cancer crusade of the American Cancer Society. Strike back at cancer. Give generously to your unit of the American Cancer Society. Now for the outcome of the trial of Arthur Bowman.
The attempt on the part of the defense to prove Bowman legally insane was unsuccessful, and the jury found him guilty. He was convicted of murder.
Violence, the story of a true crime, is written by Anthony Ellis. Harry Bartell is Dr. Richard Morley. Supporting Mr. Bartell were Ted Osborne as Arthur Bowman, Jeanette Nolan as May, and Virginia Gregg as Eileen. Featured in the cast were Lou Merrill, Bill Boucher, Richard Beals, Janine Ann Roos, and John Stevenson and David Light. Violence is directed by Norman MacDonald. The special music is composed and conducted by Marlon Skiles. Clarence Cassell speaking. This is the CBS Radio Network.